I think if you're not okay with opening up, you're never going to really discover what you, I think, are striving toward. When I look back on all this, I think the biggest thing I've done is become vulnerable with people and almost honest with my opinions. I've gotten away from trying to, put myself into a box and say, I am this person, therefore I will give this opinion, and really stepped outside of that and said, no, I'm just going to be honest. Mm-hmm. And podcasting's helped with that. And this new business, and even in work, like, it's all kind of translated into that, where I find like that feedback loop is getting tighter and tighter because I'm just giving honest feedback right away, not the feedback I think that you want to hear from me. Mm-hmm. I think being honest with myself and being vulnerable with myself has allowed me to expand out and just do some pretty wild stuff in the last year.
Welcome to the Cargo Sessions. This is episode number 116. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Before we get into it, I want to ask everyone listening, if you could do me a solid, share it with a friend. We're trying to get some more exposure around the show. So I actually got a cool email the other day. It said, I heard you ask and I did it. So hopefully you're listening and doing something with it. I'd appreciate it. Today's guest, this is going to be a fun conversation. It's like the podcaster interviewing the podcaster, which is awesome, but he's got way more experience than me. This would be a really cool story because him and I got really tight in the last year, almost to the day. And to hear his story, and just, you don't know this, but I've been like purposely not listening to anything you've been posting because I don't want to know your story. I want to just like play into the nonsense of me not knowing anything. So it was no hard feelings. I just didn't want to listen to you on any other shows so I could like hear this for the first time. So go ahead, name and who you are.
Oh man, you know, my name is Tim Truax. And first and foremost, I am a husband, beautiful wife, Sydney. I am a father of two wild girls, which is absolutely amazing. I'm a career geologist, and I am the owner and CEO of Pod Summit, my first entrepreneurial take in this beautiful world that we're living in right now, man. And it's funny, that question that you ask, it is something that I've been trying to dissect and unpack for like 2 years. Who are you? Like, that is such a question. Mm. And it's plagued me ever since I started listening to you, thinking about this, like, who am I as part of this like journey that I've been on for the last 2 years, just trying to figure out that question. And it has landed me at this table. Mm-hmm.
And that's why like I get goosebumps when you, because I know, you know, he introduced yourself as a geologist, which is great job, checks a lot of boxes. And then you start moving down this path, whether the search was, it happened for a reason 2 years ago. And then you buy a business and become an entrepreneur, right? Like I'm catching you at an interesting time. And so I think the who question is heavy because you're still trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But that being said, there's like decades behind you of like that kind of built all these building blocks to who you are. So it is a heavy question to start with.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting ones because I don't think until you start to reflect back on it as an individual that it feels like a heavy question, because you answer that question every day. You know, you put your hand out to shake someone's hand when you first meet them, introduce yourself, mm-hmm. and you usually have this kind of set thing. I'm Tim and I do this. Yep. And I found myself at a point in my life, you know, getting towards my late 30s, having ticked a whole bunch of boxes, that I started doing that as almost very robotic and not really knowing what I was saying anymore. Mm-hmm. The pandemic plays into it a little bit on the reflection side of things and trying to figure stuff out coming out of that. But it was that robotic feel to that answer that we've all been asked that how many times in our lives? Yep. Like, who are you and what do you do? And when you start to question, or when you get to a point in your time when you're like, I don't even know why I'm saying this anymore. Yep. That's where my journey kind of started about 2 years ago. And I've been calling this my self-discovery journey that has led me down all of these wild paths. But it was kind of taking that first leap and recognizing that coming out of the pandemic, I just didn't feel right anymore. I didn't feel like I was myself. And this word always comes to mind is complacent. Like, I'd become complacent in my life. Yeah. And not in a terrible way, but in a way where I'd gone through life, you know, you tick the find the girl, go to school, buy a home, have the children, get the job, have the career. And then all of a sudden I got to my late 30s and I look back and I said, well, I did all that stuff that I've been told to do for my entire life. And what do I just ride out the next 40, 50 years? Like, what do I do now? And that's where that inflection point was for me, was like, no, I'm not settling for the status quo. I want to just dive into who I am and really forge something forward and deliver something bigger. I'm happy with my career, but I want something more out of all of this. And that's where this kind of journey started, was asking some of those questions. And it really roots back to that, who are you?
Yeah. Which, and people, it's always fun listening to the answers. Because, and I think you've heard me, right? Like, I think before Candace was number 53. And before her, I was like, the question was, what are you up to? And, you know, people just kind of get into it. But, you know, when she flipped the script on me and she gave me shit for about my question, I was like, okay, noted. But yeah, it's been a fun way to start the show because it gets people thinking right away.
Yeah. And it's thinking about things, I think, at times that requires a bit of that vulnerability. And I think if you're not okay with opening up, you're never going to really discover what you, I think, are striving towards. Like when I look back on all this, I think the biggest thing I've done is become vulnerable with people and almost honest with my opinions. I've gotten away from trying to, I guess, put myself into a box and say, I am this person, therefore I will give this opinion, and really stepped outside of that and said, no, I'm just going to be honest. Mm-hmm. And podcasting's helped with that. And this new business, and even in work, like, it's all kind of translated into that, where I find like that feedback loop is getting tighter and tighter because I'm just giving honest feedback right away, not the feedback I think that you want to hear from me. And I think being honest with myself and being vulnerable with myself has allowed me to expand out and just do some pretty wild stuff in the last year.
Well, it's crazy. It's all crazy, right? Like, it's happened at a quick pace, to say the least. Well, let's get into it. You've seen a few of these.
Yeah, once or twice.
So yeah, and I'd love for you to take it back and just, you know, just talk about where you grew up, how you grew up, you know, how your folks influenced you, your family, your, you know, how, just take it back, wind it back, and let's go.
Let's go right back to the beginning, I guess. I grew up in a small town in Ontario called Washego. So it's about an hour and a half north of Toronto. It's tucked into cottage country there. Those from Ontario, those have been out there, kind of lake country and all that. Really small community. You kind of typically call it a rural community. Best friends were my parents' best friends, and we had this Friday night thing. We'd come together every Friday night, and it was, for me, it was all about like that tight-knit community. And I grew up in what you'd probably call like an idyllic life, where, you know, my parents were amazing. We didn't go without much, but lived also a very modest lifestyle. I have one sister. I have a really tight family, cousins, aunts, and uncles. And I spent my summers with my family, and we spent the winters with our friends. And that's had just like cascading effect on me, especially in the last couple of years, around community and how important it was for me growing up. I didn't really realize what it was until I started to grow my own community here in Calgary and rely on those people for things like support when we don't have family close, and for just rough times when you're going through it and you need someone just to talk to or help, or where I can go out and be a help to someone. And so my whole life I spent kind of jumping around a little bit once I got into my adolescence and into my university age and all that. But when I go back to that very, I think, humble beginning with my parents, I took so much away from that that I use in almost my day-to-day, and I find myself using it more and more. These things that were embedded with me or for me when I was young, things I didn't appreciate in the time, right down to, you know, getting my hands dirty. I started working when I was 11 years old, landscaping. My parents used to buy homes, and they would fix them up and then we would move. And we'd always move when they were at the best point. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I learned how to frame walls and do electrical, and, you know, I'm not an expert at it, but
dangerous.
I'm dangerous enough that I could probably hurt myself, mm-hmm. but also do something that's kind of cool once in a while.
Yep.
And so I kind of have all these like weird skill sets that the community I reside in now relies on once in a while. It's like, how do I do this? Or seeking out opinion. And I always kind of wanted to be that guy that people was like, oh, do you have something like a cool opinion or something? Or do you have something you can kind of offer or bring to the group? I always felt I was lacking that for a good chunk of my life. And that's the community piece of it, is, and kind of those real formative years when I was young. I realize now how impactful they were and how much they're influencing me now, not only as a father and a husband, but also as just a person in general.
It's interesting because they're kind of, like subtle lessons back then, right? Like you're just, you're experiencing things and it's not until you start looking back on them, you're like, oh, this makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. And like, it's upon that self-reflection that you're like, oh, that was for a reason.
Yeah, that's why.
Yeah, that's exactly why. And both my parents growing up were entrepreneurs as well. And it was something that I kind of ran away from. My mom is, she's a seamstress. She's kind of done her thing for 30 plus years. Always something attached to the house, like a garage or a workshop or something. So she was always present, doing her thing, grinding away. And my dad owned a bottled water company. And so they both had this like streak in them. But my sister and I, oddly enough, both sprinted in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that has to do with my mom drilling into us. You need benefits. You need to have steady income. You know, don't be house poor. And all the things that they went through, they wanted just to set the foundation for us or for my sister and I and say, don't do this. Like, go do something different. And that's what kind of led me to really, for sometimes I can't even figure out why I did it, but where I went to school and coming out here on a whim, leaving everything and everyone I knew and just starting fresh here in Calgary.
It's interesting they gave you like those rules, like to actually say like benefits, like these traditional things, you know, that obviously they didn't have. So they valued them some in some way. But yeah, that's an interesting push.
Yeah. And I think it was, and I talked to my mom about this recently too. I said,
but this like, must like, and that must be an interesting conversation now.
It is now.
Because now you're like, mom, like this is in me.
Well, I like it. That's what I like. I think you and I have talked about this in the past. It's like, I've seen this growing up my whole life. Like what it takes, the grind and the ups and downs and the inconsistencies when it comes to some of this stuff. And I just never, it was never even something I ever even considered was starting a business. Like I always just worked, got the paycheck, went home, did my thing. Mm-hmm. And I always knew that I was going to university because my mom said, you were going to university. That's something that they didn't do and that they always regretted. And my mom said, you don't have a choice. And like, so in my head from a young kid, I was always going to university. It was always a path I was on. Like high school wasn't the end. It was just the end of that phase. And then on I went to university. I never had a choice in any of this. And not in a bad way, but in a way where I think my mom said, we're going to do everything we can to provide you the opportunities that they didn't have and that they wanted. And so I just blindly, like I said, when I was listening off all that stuff, I just kind of went and just said, okay, next step is university. Okay, next step is a good paying job with benefits and a pension plan and all this stuff. Like I just kind of meandered through.
So you're told you're supposed to.
And like, but it wasn't, I don't ever think it was something that my parents ever said, like, you have to do this. But it was just ingrained in me from such an early age that this is not the life that you want. We will grind away here so that you can go on and do bigger and better. And that was kind of something that they always put inside of me. And, you know, it worked. Like I never once batted an eye. I said, okay, got in the car, went to university. Yep. Okay, got my first job, out I came. Mm-hmm. And I can reflect back on all that. And I'm thinking like, whoa, like my family all lives within an hour and a half of each other. And I'm the only one that's out here. I'm the only one that went away to university. I live 3-hour flight away from every single person. I miss a lot of stuff, but it was that path that they set me on at a very early age and just said, go.
Amazing. So what did like, what the, you know, elementary, junior high, high school, like what was going on with, what were you into back then?
It's funny because I was always...
I hope you say Star Wars at least at some point.
Don't worry, I will get to the super nerdy piece of it. But the first part of life actually was I was very into sports. Like during elementary school and in through high school, sports kind of dominated my world. And not in a competitive way. Like I never played competitive hockey. I always did like recreational baseball. I got really into rugby in high school, which I absolutely loved. It's like my single biggest regret not continuing to play club rugby beyond like second year university. Those early days, you know, I was a good kid, in, like academically wise, and I was straight and narrow, nothing too crazy. You know, like I make fun of my family and myself because, you know, you could put us in like Leave It to Beaver or something like that, right? Where it was just like everything just, it kind of worked. Mm. And I never grew up with many hardships except for a couple, you know, pretty serious deaths in my family that really had a cascading effect through my whole family, even to this day. But the hardships, like I just didn't have those. I grew up like honestly in just this like idyllic. It was just like a sitcom, and it kind of, and I loved it. Mm. And inside of that, of course, there was me, the sports guy, but then there's also me, the kind of the creative guy, the one playing with action figures well into my teens, and collecting and Star Wars and all this stuff, really heavy influence from movies. Mm-hmm. You know, Jurassic Park is literally the reason I came out to Calgary from 1993.
Okay, so we're not going to glaze over that, statement. So get into it.
So I guess it was 94. I didn't see it in theater. So I would have been 8 or 9
years old.
That's
the first one?
The first one, yeah.
So the first, that was in 94 when it came out?
93 it came out. And by the time I think I saw it, was on the VHS, on my aunt and uncle's big screen TV. Okay. Remember this to this day, her bringing it out, showing it, being like, here it is, Jurassic Park, boom, in it goes. And I was always a dinosaur kid. Like, I was fascinated by the idea that these creatures existed 65 million years ago, wandered around Earth, and then are no longer here. We're here now. And like, I grew up in a Catholic home that, mm-hmm. like, I'd say, quote unquote, Catholic, like family. My home wasn't Catholic, super Catholic. My grandparents were. But like, I never questioned the idea of evolution in a religious way or anything like that. I just went with it. And I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, wait a minute. Like, should I guess based off that, maybe I should have questioned that. But like, I've always said, like, evolution's the way, dinosaurs were here. Never really thought too much of it. And I saw Jurassic Park and I was like, oh my God, like, that is what I want to be. I want to be Alan Grant running away from raptors in the desert, digging up dinosaur bones. Mm-hmm. And I framed my whole life up around that. My mom and I, we found a journal article from 1994. I would have been in like whatever grade 4 or 5 or something like that. And I wrote in it, I want to be a fossil geologist. Like right then and there. Like I knew where I wanted to go. And I kind of structured everything after that. Not always explicitly, but I always drove towards it. Like once I got to high school, I took the classes that led me into that. And then once I got to university, that's what I kind of majored in. And I went through and eventually it landed out here. And so like from that moment, from seeing Jurassic Park, I kind of like in one way or another structured my whole life towards getting to an objective of being a geologist. Like I wanted to be a paleontologist, but then I had an interaction with a professor in university and she said, look, Tim, she says, paleontology is great, but you can't make any money. And if you ever want a full-time paleontology job, you have to get on with an older paleontologist, wait till he dies, and then you take his job. And she says, why don't you try to go to Calgary and try the oil and gas industry? She said, you get to deal with the same age rocks, some similar concepts, but you can make a living and make a life in Calgary and make a really, really good wage, you know, underscoring the whole thing. And so it was that progression from a kid who adored dinosaurs towards high school, going to university, finding the right people to influence me, absolutely falling in love with geology there, like the field courses and excelling at it and finding people that also love rocks and dinosaurs and geology and fossils and all that. And then having a prof that kind of just pivoted me enough to say, this is the realistic path. Like you can go and sit in a museum by yourself and this is no offense to paleontologists, this is really cool, but it just wasn't for me.
Yep.
And you know, I went to Carleton University. And there's a lot of hard rock geology there, like diamond exploration, mineral exploration, gold exploration. And I was one of the only ones that actually came out here for oil and gas because I didn't want to go to the bush. I didn't want to live in, you know, Timmins or Sudbury or anything like that. I wanted to have a life in a city, you know, being a rural kid that understood and appreciated the values of a rural upbringing, but also wanting something a bit bigger in kind of that city dwelling, the access to things like theaters and arts and a community, a bigger community. You know, I grew up, never went to NHL games. I went to a couple baseball games, but I wanted that access. When I first moved here and there's an NHL team down the road, I was like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like very, very cool stuff. Yeah. And so I've always been trying to kind of find that balance and everything. And in my job, in my career, it was coming out here where, you know, make a good wage, could do exactly what I wanted to do and have fun at it. And then also have the balance with the family on the other side.
Crazy. One movie, hey?
One movie. And like that movie spawned a whole bunch of other things.
Well, so you were, how old were you when that movie came out?
So I was 8 years old when it came out, probably 8 or 9 when I saw it.
Okay. So that's like
say 30 years ago.
Grade six, four or five.
Four or five or okay. something. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. how does, so when you're living this like ideal kind of lifestyle, you know, things are just happening, moving. Yeah. So what else is going on? You hit Jurassic Park at a young age.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to university, you know, you're going like, you have all these things. So what else is like, what else is driving you?
Well, I think one of the big things was, for lack of a better term, is I wanted my own ability to control from a financial perspective, the things that I wanted. And so I mentioned earlier that I started work when I was 11. Mm-hmm. And this would be a big shout out for those that live and drive up the highway to their cottage every single day. Is I worked at a place called Weber's. It's like a hamburger stand.
Went away.
That everyone drives from Toronto.
Still there?
It's still there. Yeah, it's like a classic. It's like it is an institution.
Yep.
Like, and I'm talking like thousands of people a day pass through this place. And it's insane. Like burgers, milkshake, french fries, hot dogs. That's what's on the menu. And the story behind this restaurant is that the old owner, he used to drive up to Cottage Country, which is about an hour and a half drive from Toronto up to the lakes and all that. And the story is, whether or not this is true, is that he drove until he got hungry, and then he bought the land where it was and built a restaurant. And this is, like I said, an institution in Ontario, especially for that cottage drive. And so I got a job there when I was 11 years old. Like, not like they paid me cash, like under the table, because I wasn't even legally allowed to work yet. And I was landscaping. Like, I was cutting the grass. I was raking stones. They had the couple acre lot, just okay. beautiful picnic tables. Like, I'd say like 50 plus picnic tables. And, you know, so I worked from basically end of school right through until they close in the wintertime, because they don't open in the winter.
Yep.
And so I was always just kind of grinding away. And I love the idea of being able to make money. And my parents always said, we'll provide you with the fundamentals, but we're not buying you, like, you want a Lacoste shirt, you gotta buy it. Like, I'm sorry. And so I had this like deep rooted idea of the value of money from a very young age, because at 11, I'm grinding away so I have the cool clothes for the upcoming school year, so that I could buy the toys that I wanted. So that, like, I bought my first Xbox, I bought my first TV out of this money that I made. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would eventually go and buy my own beer with it, stuff like that. Like, I always had this dispendable cash, and it was because I worked there from 11 till 21.
No way.
Yeah, I worked.
A decade.
Yeah, every summer. And then when I was in university, I'd come back a little earlier and you get an extra couple months. And I worked with two awesome dudes that were kind of just like mentors in that space. And it was just a ton of fun, like translating that experience I had, you know, with my parents, working with them, and, you know, I worked farmland and all that kind of stuff. And that just translated over to this. And it was just a thing I did. Like, I never even batted an eye. Like, even when I was in high school, I'd be like hung over as mm-hmm. like just the worst. Mm-hmm. Like, and getting up at 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning after partying till 3 in the morning and hitting there, like, blue in the gills. Mm-hmm. But I still went. And my dad drove me every single Sunday, every single Saturday. And it just became something that was just inside of me. Like, I've been, like, working consistently since I was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And it would come – and some of that is embedded, as I talk out loud, in that idea with my parents saying, like, you know, secure yourself. If you want to enjoy the things in life, mm-hmm. you got to make sure you're secure first. And that has just been in me since 11. Like,
crazy. So, and the, well, I don't know what word you want to use, the fascination, obsession with all the characters, like all that. When does that start? I feel like it's got to be at a young age. Like, when do you start buying, whether it's figurines or like nerding out on movies, like when does that get, is it Jurassic Park is the start of everything?
You know, it goes even before that. So like, the podcast I have is called The Nerd Room, and I'm this giant nerd. Like, if you, like, my room, I got a room in the basement, it's called The Nerd Room. I've got, you know, vintage action figures, and I'm very, very like a nostalgia person. Yep. And that's like heavily rooted in my family. But this goes back to Ghostbusters in the late 80s, Ninja Turtles in the early 90s. And then Jurassic Park was like the thing for me. from a toy and like an influence perspective. And then it's a little later on in life, I get into Star Wars.
Yep.
And that carries through, I guess, mostly like 99 through even 2005. So I'm in my second year in university, buying action figures and displaying them in my university room.
Like all
like,
in.
Like all in, man. Like I had a buddy question me the other day, be like, so like, how did that go in university? But I just said, I don't care, man. Like, just embrace. It's always ebbed and flowed for me. Like, there's at times when I'm like super, like, this is who I am. And yep. Then there's other times where I was like, when I first moved out here, it was like a little quieter about it.
Yep.
And then I got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm comfortable with the people and the community I am. This is actually all
yep.
me.
Yep.
And from then on, you like, you become like the Star Wars guy or yep. the Marvel guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that was always been ingrained in me. And funny enough, my dad is a collector. He's like Western, like old John Wayne, like him and I used to watch John Wayne movies like every single Saturday. Mm. And he collects kind of old vintage stuff from his era. My uncle's a huge sports memorabilia collector. My cousin is a sports memorabilia and G.I. Joe collector. Mm. Like we have this, like the four of us.
It's in you.
It's in me. Yeah, yeah. And we had the four of us just have this like cool back and forth mm-hmm. where we invite each other when we mm-hmm. do make it out there to each other's places. Check this out. And mm-hmm. everything's on display. Everyone's mm-hmm. got a space and a room. But I've always found it very cathartic to have that release.
Yep.
And it's no different than someone having like a sports bar in their house yep. or it's just different. Like up until, let's say 10, 15 years ago, there's always that more negative connotation with nerd.
Yeah, yeah. You've like... You've been in it for so long. Yeah. Like everything you do, you've doing it for so long. Now you're catching it on the cool side.
Yeah.
Like now it's
definitely on the downward, like where it's penetrated into society so much totally. That people are just kind of like, oh, it's just a part of everything.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
Marvel and Star Wars, yep. you can kind of go really to any shop and you're going to see it. You go to Foot Locker, yep. you go to Lego, you go wherever.
Yep.
You're going to see something from that brand, cereal aisle. It doesn't matter. It's all there. It's penetrated so far into common culture
yep.
that is just part of it all. Like the idea of it being a separate pop culture is kind of like some of it is still there, but yep. it's just so far in because of the Marvel movies, the Star Wars movies. And it's been cool to watch.
Yeah.
Because I've never been a gatekeeper about any of that. Like you get some people that are like, oh, the whole world likes Marvel now. I was, you know, into it at the beginning reading comic books. And like that's super cool. But I think it's more awesome that everyone's kind of into it
yeah.
and there's a huge community now mm-hmm. and you can kind of always find someone to share stuff with
yep.
because that wasn't always there. It definitely wasn't always there for me.
It's so, it's fascinating because it's, I think about, it's just to go like all in on it at a young age, you know, and just, and to, like you said, people go in all in on sport, they go all in on video games, like mm-hmm. everyone's got their thing, right?
Yeah.
Which is obviously, if you don't find your thing, that's kind of unfortunate because yeah, then what?
Yeah.
Like you're kind of fumbling around looking for something, but does that kind of carry you? Is it always around you, like coming through junior high and high school, like in university, or is it like between work, that passion, and just like hammering school? Like
it's always there. And I yeah. think like my career choice or at least major choice in university being geology, there's a certain person there. And so we're watching Star Wars movies, you know, we're hanging out.
Like your community.
It's a community, right? And so you're kind of finding those like-minded people.
Yep.
We used to go to like the old, like the theater Here's the Globe, but I can't remember what it was in Ottawa, but we used to go and watch like, they'd put Blade Runner on or Indiana Jones. And a few of us would go, there's a tiny bar attached to it. We'd go have a few beers and then go watch Indiana Jones in the theater and all that. And so I'd say like the volume of stuff that I had on me at that time, like yep. when it comes to like action figures and posters on the wall, it kind of ebbs and flows.
Yep.
And more so now, like as an adult, and I kind of have a space for it.
Yeah.
But I didn't lug it around to university and like I had some of it,
mm-hmm.
but it's kind of always been present with me. And it's always just been this cool influence that, and I think like stemming into like the podcast space and all that too, it's always provided me this source of inspiration because you look at these creators, you look at these people that were forging new ways, like with Star Wars, with technology and Ghostbusters, like it's all these very creative minds that these guys that are at the tip of the spear, your George Lucas's, your Spielberg's, all these type of guys. And I find them influencing me even to this day. And not so much like in a, I want to be a director, I want to be a filmmaker, But in just more of the creative sense and forging a path, like these guys were like, with, you look at Spielberg with Jaws, yep. and Lucas, of course, with Star Wars, and you know, even guys like Kevin Feige with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and all that. Like these guys are at the peak of their industry and creating some of the most unbelievable things. And they all just started very humbly and forged their own way. And these guys are considered like, you know, little gods in this space. Mm-hmm. And they've delivered so much. Like even a guy like Spielberg, you can rattle off probably like 5 or 6 movies, top movies of all time. And he has had his hand inside of those, which is really cool.
The reason I'm on you on this, because I caught you like way later in life. So, and you and I have talked at length about just how like all these little things in the past kind of lead you to where you are today. So I needed this like foundational, I needed you to like lay this foundation. So we get going forward. Yeah. I'd be like, see, this mother, like this thing started, like this is not overnight. So anyways, go ahead. High school, university, walk me through.
High school. So high school was really around sports for me. Like that's probably when I dipped a little bit out of that nerdy space. You know, you discover girls, you discover sports. And I got really into like the team aspect, especially later in high school, like grade 10, 11, 12. And it was all rugby and the camaraderie around that and the ability to get physical. Like I was never an overly physical kid. Like I was small up until I got into university. And rugby gave me an outlet. It gave me a position where I could be a little bit more aggressive. Yep. And then also gave that team aspect that I was kind of always searching for. Like I always had this cool community, but you always want to be kind of part of a team, part of something bigger. And because I never really played hockey, rugby finding it just was this really cool outlet for me. And I played it in club rugby through the end of university. I never played in university. And then I got to about my second year and I kind of stopped. And for no real reason other than I think I got nervous about getting hurt.
Yep.
And, you know, I saw a club rugby team in a bar the other day and I was like, it's probably a reason I'm not playing anymore. Those are some big dudes. So yeah, that was really it. And then grinding towards university. I had a very momentary lapse of that whole path at grade 12. So when I was coming in Ontario, when I was going up through grade 12, my grade 12 year was the last year of grade 13 in Ontario before they got rid of it.
Yep.
So my year going to university, there is 2x the amount of people leaving high school going into Ontario University. So it was really hard that 1 year, 2008, to get into university. And so I had decided that I was actually going to go back and do a victory lap, as it was called, because you're still allowed to go and do more classes.
Yep.
And our rugby team was doing a tour in Scotland. And I said, okay, cool. I'm going to go play rugby for a year, hang out, drink beer, you know, upgrade some classes.
Yep.
And then I got into the summer and I panicked. And I was like, what am I doing? I've deviated from my course. And I had already paid a deposit and everything to go to Scotland and go play rugby with my buddies and all that. And I yanked the deposit and I ended up going to a satellite campus of Nipissing University, which is a university in North Bay.
Yep.
And doing like random classes for a year, like night classes at whatever I was, 18. And it was very odd. And I would drive up at sometimes for a 6:30 p.m. class. But what it ended up doing for me, it ended up setting the stage for the 4 years of actual university because I did all my electives in that year. Mm. And so when I went into what would have been my first through fourth year of true university, I only ended up doing 4 classes a term. So I always had 1 less class. Mm. And so I was able to really focus on what I wanted. And so I always look back on that very, like that momentary lapse of, you know, my path. Whoa. Being like, okay, it actually worked out. I did 5 years of university, but it allowed me to really concentrate on what I wanted to do inside of the university I went to in Ottawa, which was very highly focused on earth sciences and geology.
Amazing. So when you're graduating, that one prof, was it a prof that kind of like talked to you and like said that idea, you know, from this very, dude, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but a very formulaic life.
It was, man. Yeah.
Check, and nothing, dude, everyone wants that. So it's not like, it'd be more jealousy than like, what the fuck? When he said that to you, what do you like? Did you have a plan when you were like working through university of what you wanted to do? Like what was a realistic expectation?
I thought I knew what I wanted to do inside of that. And I got really into like the fields aspect of geology there for a while. We had some like really cool field courses where we'd go out and we'd spend 10 days in the bush, camping in cabins, mapping rocks, you know, drinking beer at night, sitting around campfires with guitars. It was awesome. And it was always in the summertime, so it was hot. And that's what I thought I wanted to do. And I tried really, really hard to get on a couple crews in my second and third year, and it just never happened. And but once I got a little bit further along, I kind of fell out of love with that. Even so much so today, like I'm not a, like we camp as a family, like we have an RV, and I'm not a big hiker. I'm not a big mountain guy, even though we live, you know, an hour from them. And so I look back on that and I found myself kind of, you know, I was trying to fit into something that really wasn't for me. And this prof, when she kind of yanked me aside, because I said I want to go into the paleontology program. And she says, okay, this is really, and they got a pretty good paleontology program there now. It's at Carleton.
Yep.
And when she kind of looked at me and she said, you know, she's trying to encourage people to come out to Calgary and do something a little different. We had to like, really, it's called the difference between soft rock and hard rock. It's like the mineral versus oil and gas, if you're going to put it in an industry perspective.
Yep.
And she said, like, just go try. And I didn't know what I was getting into. Like I'd never been west of like Thunder Bay and I'd never been east of Montreal. And so I'd spent my entire life inside of a time zone. Like I went down to Florida a couple times, Disney World, all that.
Yep.
But I was in a time zone up until I was like 22 or something, 21. I'd never exited it. And I just picked up and said, okay. And applied for a job, got the job, flew out here. And I landed in a house with a buddy. And it turns out that I met another guy who then introduced me to my now wife. But I just literally picked up my whole life, which, again, looking back at it all this reflection I've been doing, no one in my family ever left. Like, my parents moved up north, and I don't know if their parents ever forgave them for moving an hour and a half away. And I moved a whole country away. But I just never, it was the same with the university. I couldn't tell you why to this day, why I went to Carleton. Like I knew I wanted to be in geology, but I didn't, I applied to one university. Like I just kind of just said, that's the one I want to go to. I went and visited a buddy there and we had a really good time. And I just said, okay, I want to apply here. And I went there. And then it's the same thing with Calgary. It's like, I applied to one company out here and I got the job and I was like, okay, I'm going to Calgary.
And that like, so my experience, what was it about? Was it a quick yes? So for me, and the reason I'm asking is, so I moved to Toronto once to open up an office out there.
Yeah.
And they, in the office, they're like, who wants to go out here? We need like 14 people. And for whatever reason, I said yes. And I was in the same boat as you. Like I didn't, been in Calgary my whole life. Didn't really wander. Like my path was fairly straight. Knew everybody, like everybody, you know, I knew enough people here. But they said that and I was like, you know what? I'm at this point where I feel like I need to experience something different. Mm-hmm. So it was a quick yes. And the plane landed. I was like, what the fuck did I do? and it lasted 11 months. And then I came scrambling home. So when you, like a quick yes, and you were just like,
it's gone, man. Yeah. And it's funny because I like I said, I lived a very comfortable life inside of, you know, arguably Pleasantville, for lack of a better term, maybe. And like in a really great way. Like I don't look back
this
on
isn't like...
I don't look back on that with any sort of bitterness. Like I loved my upbringing. I loved the way my parents dealt with us. I loved the family I had around us and the community. It was like really, really cool. And like the funny, like no divorced parents and, you know, everyone had like the nuclear family, two kids, you know, just everything. And so I just picked up one day and left Pleasantville, went to Ottawa. And the same thing, I got the job and I was like, okay. Like when I saw the numbers for my first job in the oil and gas industry, I was like, I'm never gonna need to make another dime in my whole life. Turns out that was very wrong. But I thought I was the richest man on planet Earth. I was like, I'm gonna go buy a Beamer. Still never bought a car out here, but but I just had this like vision of like, it's this path. It's just like here. Like I never questioned any of that until I got like 16 years into my career. And I said, okay, now let's reflect and see. Like I don't regret any of those decisions, and I would never change a single one of them.
Well, especially where,
where
it all is right now, right? Like, so when you get here, what year is that?
2008. Yeah, so I've been here a while.
Yeah. So what happens when you get here? So you're, and are you? Yeah. Anyways, run me through what happens here, like how you fit in and what you discover and what it's like to move across the country.
Yeah, so I showed up, and my buddy, who I went to university with, he had gotten me a room in a house. There was six people living in this up in Brentwood, right by the university. And so it was six random people. And I showed up midway through the summer, because after university, we did a field course in Hawaii, looked at volcanics and all this stuff. And then me and my friends, we stayed there for another 2 weeks, just surfing, bumming around. Mm-hmm. So I land back in Calgary after this like month-long, you know, boondoggle in Hawaii. And I show up here and directly into corporate Calgary. The slacks, the button-up shirt,
all of it,
the hair slicked back, all this stuff, away I go. But the house I moved into, there's a group of guys in there, or at least one of them, that got on really well with, you know, went to Kilkenny, had wings every Tuesday, and big schooner nights, and all this kind of wild stuff. But I was effectively living with university guys. They were a couple years younger than me.
Yep.
But also working downtown corporate Calgary, and, you know, it cost me $500 a month to live, like, all in. And I was like, okay, like, I could do this.
Mm-hmm. Numbers make sense.
I spent a year, basically, like, a fifth or sixth year university, but then just going downtown and working.
Yeah, instead of going across the street, you went downtown.
Exactly. Up in the, just hopped the train and down I went. Mm-hmm. And when I first got to corporate Calgary too, they didn't really know what to do with me. So they immediately sent me overseas and I went to Europe for months. And I remember getting on the plane and they said, here's your ticket, sir. And I said, okay, thank you. I go to turn right. And they're like, no. You go up here to the left, up front. And I'm like, wait a minute. What is happening?
This is like, me here.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. Like, I'm like, you know, you dress comfy to get on a plane, like freaking whatever, like track pants on and all this. And like, here's your mimosa. Would you like your warm towelette and all this? And so I spent like 5 or 6 years traveling around Europe with work, you know, lived in London in the UK for a year and a half. Lived in Norway, you know, booted around Europe for doing geology trips and all this kind of stuff. It was awesome. Mm. Like, it was like a crash course into oil and gas industry exploration.
Yep.
I learned so much. Like, the company that I worked for, it was Nexen at the time, was just unbelievable. Like, the exposure that they gave us to not only like on a travel and culture scale, but also like the rocks and the projects and the contributions we were able to make at like a really young age. Mm. Was like mind bending. Like, I just couldn't believe that run that we went on. And so I'm doing a lot of traveling back and forth through Europe and through all this. And it's in that time that I meet my wife, Sydney. And, you know, we really hit it off. And it was one of those moments where you walk in, you're like, that's the person. Mm. Like, that was just what it was. Like, again, like, it's this like silly box ticking thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, I just met her and I was like, whoa, like, she's really cool. And then it just clicked right away. Both of us knew, like, right then and there. We were friends for about a year or so. And then I told her that, like, 2 days before I was moving to London, I was like, so I have to get this off my chest before I leave. So I'm going to regret if I leave. Again, another one of these, like, weird things. They just said to me one day, do you want to go live in the UK for, it turned out to be a year and a half. And I was just like, yep. Like, didn't really think about it. It just kind of came. Like, I've always made fun of myself a little bit with at least my geology career. I said, it's been about right place, right time. And just saying yes to stuff.
Well,
and this as you know, it kind of comes full circle.
It's a theme with you.
Like, it just, like, that was the same with getting the job and, you know, and meeting my wife. It was just like, yes, like, let's, like, I just, and it's funny because I'd always considered myself a relatively risk averse person.
Yeah.
But like, when you look back on it all, it's like, I just kept saying yes to things that felt right.
Yeah.
That maybe I should have put more time and effort into thinking about, like, is this the right move for me? Is it not? But I never questioned that decision. Mm. And like, I got to live, you know, about a 20-minute walk from the Natural History Museum. So I got to literally walk down every Saturday and go look at a giant T-Rex and all this stuff. Like, it was like really cool.
A lot of, like, intuition, right?
Like, I think so.
And probably didn't understand at the time.
No.
but to follow those, like, to actually take those big risks, because they're like risks of some sort, but yeah. I think it's intuition led.
Yeah.
2015.
Yeah.
Where are you and what's going on?
2015, this is like a big year. So going back to kind of like the nerd experience of it all, So in the early 2000s is when like Marvel Cinematic Universe kicks off, you know, and when you get towards 2015 is Star Wars is coming back in the theaters. Yep. It's been gone for a decade.
You must be losing your shit when all this is happening.
I'm just like this is, yeah, like next level. Yeah. I don't even this whole atmosphere had dramatically changed from 2008-ish to 2015. Huge turnover in all of it.
And so from, dude, this is like me being ignorant, but like in the shadows, behind the scenes, mm-hmm. like obviously monsters, everyone knew what all these organizations were. Brands, what do you call them?
I'd say brands.
Brands.
IPs.
Yes. Exactly, smart guy. but then all of a sudden they start publishing them again.
Yeah.
And it becomes like super mainstream. Like it's the talk of everything.
Yeah. And that's like, that's Marvel. Like 2008 is when... we're going to really get into the nerd aspect of this.
Do your thing.
Iron Man and The Dark Knight come out, those two movies, and they changed.
Is that the start of it?
That's the start of it. Yeah. That would you'd be called, or that's what I traditionally call like the modern era of comic book movie, and really of pop culture. That's when it all pops off. You get some seeds of it a little bit earlier, but 2008 was the pivot point. It proved that these could be like box office juggernauts, and they could be good quality.
Yep.
You get some hints of that with Spider-Man in the early 2000s, X-Men and all that stuff. But it's really there that it all pivots. Mm. And that's when Marvel Studios emerges. Disney buys them. Disney buys Star Wars. Star Wars gets announced. It's coming back in 2015. Mm. The Marvel Cinematic Universe in there had gone through 2012's Avengers into Age of Ultron. And it's like they're making billions of dollars at this. And it's so mainstream. Everyone knows who all these characters are. 10 years ago, people, you know, maybe would understand like who Spider-Man is and Superman and all this stuff. But these are like household names, like on launch boxes, everywhere you can find, Foot Locker shoes, all this kind of stuff. And so by the time I get to 15, everyone's talking about this stuff.
And you're like deep in your career.
Yeah. And I have the dispensable cash to all the things that I wanted from like a collecting aspect and all this. I can kind of get like, I'm not excessive with it, but I enjoy doing it. And that's where, you know, my wife and I buy our first home in 13. And that's where I finally have, you know, a house that has a spare bedroom.
Yep.
And that's where I start to create what eventually becomes the Nerd Room. Mm. And that's where I start displaying my stuff. And that's where I start, you know, really getting into it again.
Yep.
And because I have a space for it. It's not just in bins in the basement or whatever. It's something that I can go in and I use it as a bit of a decompression. Yep. I look just to, you know, wipe away the day a little bit. I can kind of go in there and reflect back on my whole life on the nostalgia piece, but also the stuff that I know and love. And inside of all that, there is this yearning to want to share an experience with more and more people. Like I think through Star Wars, it was, you know, I always became the Star Wars guy and my friends were always like, let's go. Like I think I bought like 25 tickets to go see The Force Awakens from like, all, like, so I had like a whole row. Like we were on there just, I think they all went on sale during the Super Bowl that year. And so my wife and I like just grinding away, trying to get all these tickets, buying them in swath. You're only allowed to buy 8 at a time. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing all this and me and my buddy were really into comic books at that point. And we used to walk from downtown Calgary up to Kensington.
Okay.
And so it was like 20-minute walk every day. We go to a comic book shop there and we talk back and forth. And we met through comic books, like through a mutual friend. And so he was listening to Kevin Smith at that point in time. And he said, Kevin Smith, he's podcasting. And he says, everyone should be podcasting. And it's super easy, low barrier for entry. We should do a podcast, he says to me. I said, yeah, sure. You know, I think I know enough about this stuff and I like the sound of my voice. I've been presenting for like the better part of a decade at work or whatever it was. And so I felt comfortable enough, I guess, expressing myself or different opinions or the conversational piece of it all. So one day we just plopped a microphone in front of us and thus began my podcasting career. It was just at the end of 2015 after The Force Awakens had come out. We just started talking and I literally have not stopped talking about it on a microphone since like almost 10 years now.
10 years and like 400?
400 and over 450 episodes now, like 380 some odd of the actual show plus about 100 bonus episodes or so that we've done over the years with different people. I've had many different co-hosts and it's become this passion of mine, this creative outlet, this ability to express, share, and create a community has been next level. And I look back and it's everything that I'm doing now and I did with that comes from something in my past, like that love and passion for the culture, mm-hmm. the community stuff that was so important to me growing up that I didn't quite realize or rationalize until I was much older.
Yeah.
And that all kind of came together through podcasting. And for the first time, I actually had a creative outlet. Like I wasn't a big drawer or anything like that, or I didn't have like a creative venture or avenue to express myself. And podcasting really did that for me. It's the first time I did something where I was like actively investigating how to improve sound quality and, you know, getting into the technology of it, the different platforms, the analytics behind it all, and just really diving into it and having a hobby that I think was evolving as I got into it.
Yep.
Like the kind of nerd aspect of it is always kind of evolving, but it's kind of, in a sense, it's just been a mainstay.
Yep.
Where this has changed through time. And it's allowed me to be quite a bit more dynamic. And then it also translates to everything I do now. Mm-hmm. Like the ability to hold a conversation, the ability to be confident in a scenario where you might not have all the information, but you can kind of dig through people through yeah. interviewing and having discussions. You can kind of figure out what's on the other side of that and make something maybe out of nothing.
Yeah. That to start a show in 2015 and like early days, probably like, same thing as starting to collect.
Mm-hmm.
Like early days, I knew nothing. Like at 2015, like, you know, I was into some tech. Like
yeah.
I was into things, but podcasting, I don't know what I thought about it. I probably had some opinions about it, either like super nerdy or
yeah.
very underground or like, what do they do? Like, obviously I didn't understand.
Yeah, here we are.
Whoops. But that, was it like a dual, were you living like a, how did you manage a full-time job, family, and then this like passion project? And the passion project, I understand how much work this all is to mm-hmm. pull off a show. And how do you allocate time and energy to make that happen for obviously a decade, but like at the start of it, right? As you're researching, yeah. you know, there's probably not a lot of YouTubers explaining how to do things. So it's a lot of R&D stuff. So yeah. how do you summon the energy to pull that off?
I had a really supportive wife.
Just allowed you to go in this room
like,
and shut it down.
That's it. And like, it became a habit.
Yeah.
Like every Tuesday, almost every Tuesday for the last 10 years, I've done the same thing.
Say that one more time for the people in the back.
Almost every Tuesday for the last 10 years, I've done pretty much the same thing. And that is get behind a microphone and talk about pop culture. Talk about Star Wars, Marvel, DC, whatever it was. Movies, trailers, action figures, doesn't matter. So having a supportive partner was a big piece of it. Mm-hmm. She kind of gave me that freedom, but she also recognized the value it was giving to me.
Yeah.
Even when I don't think I understood what yeah. it was doing. Like I looked at it and said like, this is cool. Maybe I'll get famous from it. Like my initial approach, yeah, was community building, but I also looked at it and said like, maybe I could get on the red carpet at yeah. a Star Wars premiere, or maybe I could meet, you know, whomever, Kevin Feige.
And to get on those red carpets for a bunch of very different reasons, A, to be like, the voice of the industry, or B, I'm sure you thought about you could interview people or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It was like, okay.
And that was happening in 15.
Yeah.
Like Star Wars podcasting especially, like the guys that got into it earlier, like 13, 14, in the build up to The Force Awakens especially,
yeah.
those guys were getting like pretty access. Wild access. Mm-hmm. And so the access that the big corporations get now, because they have podcasts, because they have a huge social media presence. Like that transition hadn't happened yet. Like that didn't happen to like 17, 18, when you saw a lot of the big guys, the big players reposition themselves into the social media, into podcasting, into like this different brand style yep. of what was considered more indie or guerrilla. Like that didn't happen until a little bit later on. And so there's some Star Wars podcasts that were getting like unprecedented access. Mm. And they were just dudes talking to a microphone. That's changed a lot now.
Yeah.
Like it kind of fell off a cliff in 17, 18. But it was one of those things that, going back to the question about like just where do I find the energy? I just loved it so much. Mm. And it goes back to childhood. It goes back to adolescence. I love just expressing myself. Mm-hmm. And then that value feedback that you're kind of getting, or that the feedback loop that you get from interacting with people on Twitter, yeah, interacting with people on Instagram, and finding people that said like, hey, Tim, this is a great episode. Mm-hmm. And you're like, whoa, strangers. Not only did someone listen, mm-hmm, but I'm also getting acknowledged. And then your voice becomes a bit of, I don't like using the word authority, but it becomes a bit more respected.
Yeah.
And people turn to you for certain things, turn to you for opinions. You know, I get that both here and online. And that felt really good, that I was not only bringing value to people, but people were kind of reciprocating and giving that back to me.
Yeah.
And so that was a really cool experience for me. And then I just fell in love with the medium. Like, I like that it's a little bit lower barrier for entry. Like, I don't do video, but I like getting behind the microphone.
Yeah.
And I like exploring options to improve the sound quality, improve the edits, add in little clips. And, you know, I've always done this in a relatively compressed time frame. I record on Tuesday's release on Wednesday night. I put it all together, just the sound, and my rule is it's got to sound good. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care. Maybe you don't like the content and it's tough for me to change my voice. Maybe you don't like that, but I can definitely control the quality of it. And so it just became a habit. And then it became a passion, a love, and then it's kind of, you know, led into something pretty spectacular on the other side of it.
For sure. The to do it for that long, it's almost like our friend Tiana, mm-hmm, when she talks about like walking downstairs into the basement and like being this, you know, she has a podcast. And walking downstairs, you know, leaves her family upstairs and she feels like this weirdo going to the basement and recording these shows, right?
Yeah.
To then balance that with like then opening the door and coming back out into the real world. I'm curious to see how you deal with that, but I'm also curious right beside that of how you manage the dip, or have you had the dip in energy over the last decade of how you're like, do I still got this?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say the management of coming out the other side of it is, again, my wife's told me this before, like I come out just vibrating. Mm. And even if I've had the shittiest day,
yeah,
I will still go down and record, because it just allows me to disconnect from the crap of day to day, whether that's work or whether that is something crappy happened with the kids or something like that. This has always just been like that escapism, pure escapism. Mm. And I've always gone down, and there's been a couple times where I had to force myself to do it. I just didn't feel like it, or I was bagged, tired, whatever. The kids were up all night.
Yep.
I said, no, like I'm gonna go down and do this. And I always come up feeling refreshed. Mm. And my wife sees that, I see that. Mm. And so not only did it become a creative outlet and a creative habit, but it also became a mental health aspect. And it was one of my saviors during the pandemic, if I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Well,
I struggled through that big time, mm-hmm, like through the pandemic, with the idea of losing control, trying to manage life with two young kids, not knowing who to believe, who to trust, you know, this thing that death was on our doorsteps, mm-hmm, struggled with that big time. Mm-hmm. But through that whole thing, we went from, what was it, the first week of March was the last time I recorded in person with the guys. We used to always record in person, up to four of us in my basement.
Amazing.
And we flipped in 1 week from in person to online. We went to Zoom, and then we did Google Meets, and then we did some backward stuff through Skype for a while. Yep. And then we finally got exposed to some of the new online platforms that emerged during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But it was that consistency and that camaraderie across the microphones, across the screens, that helped keep me sane. It helped make me feel good. And I got that energy. You know, we had some of the crappiest days of our lives during all of that. But every Tuesday I go down, record, and I come up feeling normal again. I'd come up feeling energized. And so I often attribute that to like a major piece of what got me through some of the tougher times in the pandemic, was that I always had podcasts. And we did not miss we didn't miss a single episode from 15 until the first episode we ever missed, I think, was during the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't miss another one until we went through a bit of a transition about a year or so ago.
Yep.
And now we've been consistent ever since. So I probably only missed, I'd say collectively, in the almost 10 years, probably like 5 weeks of not recording. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
As you're running through that, what I find fascinating is like that that energy you get from it. So it's like, it's almost exactly opposite of what I get.
The exhaustion.
Yeah. But when you're talking about that, like that piece that helps your mental fitness. Mm-hmm. I get that out of athletics.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how you can get it in two different places. Mm-hmm. And I never would have, that never would have dawned on me that that's a possibility of actually having a podcast.
Yeah. And it's like, and I do the workout thing like every day. And so I'm chasing that through that as well. And that's like a mental fitness for, I think, keeping up with the kids.
Yeah.
And the podcasting, because, you know, I had like endless conversations about podcasting and all that. And like, even right now, I can feel it inside of me. Like when I stand up, when we're done this, I'm going to be absolutely vibrating. Mm-hmm. It's like whenever you and I sit down and we'll just literally talk for like an hour and a half,
yep.
I'll finish that conversation. I'll walk outside and I'm like vibrating with energy. Mm. I think it just gets my brain moving in a way that it wasn't before. And it's so different from what I do on a daily basis that it allows me to, like, I get some of my best work done after I podcast. Like, I'll sit down and just write. Mm. And if I don't, my sleep gets all screwed up because I'm sitting there thinking about the lists and what I have to do for Podsummit and what I have to do for this. And then I get into, like, house stuff. And, like, I find that my brain just gets so active and so energized after that I do some, like, I'll just sometimes say to my wife, I got to sit and just write. I'll just explode onto a Word document and just write everything down. And then I can kind of move the pieces around and say, okay, now I have my path forward for the next like 3 or 4 days on what needs to be done. Here's the priorities and just kind of grinding away.
Yep.
Like, and it's sometimes to a fall because I will, and this is something I inherited from my mom. I don't sit down. Like I'm always, always moving. My wife's just like, Tim, just sit down. I'm like, can't, I got it. Like I'm always looking for that way to optimize time. Like if I'm in a car, I'm calling someone. Mm. If I'm making dinner, I've got my earbuds in and I'm editing a podcast. If I'm downstairs doing work, I run over to the laundry or the washing machine, throw a load of laundry in, like this idea of multiple things happening at once. Mm-hmm. And so like when I get out of podcasting, I'm like,
flying.
Everything is going on. So yeah, it's I never really thought of it a way to like equate it to working out, but it kind of is.
It's like you're getting the exact same thing. You know, you're not like your heart rate's getting elevated, but it's not getting elevated. But that same, the idea of, you know, when you say the pandemic was really hard on you, you know, some people that either picked up fitness as a way to kind of keep their mind calm but if you can find it in podcasting, there's no way I would have thought that could have been a solution to kind of keep your mind straight.
Yeah. And I think that's why some people are okay just being hobbyist podcasters.
Yeah.
Like that there doesn't always have to be an end game.
You don't have to make money.
No, you don't have to make money. You don't have to become famous. Mm. You know, some people just, and I was like that for years.
Yeah.
Like I never monetized anything.
Yep.
All I wanted to do was interact with people. Mm-hmm. And we sold a few t-shirts and stuff like that. But like we never did Patreon. We never monetized inside of ads and all that kind of stuff. It was just an outlet.
Yep.
We never saw it as anything more than that.
How do you, have you managed the time? Have you ever thought about like winding it down? Have you managed the like inner demons of like, yeah, this is kind of, it's on its last legs?
Oh, we always said that when it felt like work, then that was the end.
I still can't believe you do it every fucking Tuesday night.
Yeah, I still
like,
do.
And like, I'm, I know, it's just like, I think about it, I'm like, that's every week. That's every Tuesday. And, you know, anyways, just like it's a giant number. So how do you, it doesn't feel like work?
No, it still doesn't feel like work to me. Like it just, it's, I've never gotten to the point. So maybe once we went through a period where a few of my co-hosts left, they got burnt out, like Podburn and, you know, the pop culture, like Marvel and DC and stars. It's really taken a hit, I would say, in like, especially at the latter part of the pandemic into the last couple of years where quantity was favored over quality. Yep. And a lot of my buddies that were really into it really felt the impact of that and just got burnt out by it. Burnt out by the pandemic, burnt out by getting behind the microphone every Tuesday.
Yep.
And so there's one point where I said, okay, is this a sign that this is the end of it? Like, should I just sign off here and walk away into the sunset? We're at like episode 350. I was like, maybe this is a sign. It's kind of a weird even number.
Yep.
I'm sure I could work backwards like why 3 and 5 are important or something like that in my life. But so I remember I created a few single episodes where I did some like heavily like edited and researched type podcasts, like solo podcasts. And then I made a decision, no, I'm going to continue even if it's just by myself because I can't relinquish this passion. because I think it will leave too big of a void for me. I think I would have the inverse effect where maybe some people would see it as like you're releasing a burden.
Yep.
I would say that I am taking something away from me that helps me mentally, physically, and also gives me this spark that I need kind of every week yep. to get energized for the back half. I think I'm a better father. I'm a better husband. Like it might be weird to say that, but I think I go through like a mental reset every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And then a buddy of mine that I met online, never met him in person, lives in Japan. He jumped on a couple of times and I said, okay, let's do this. And so he's my co-host now. And so we just do it every Tuesday when he's able to. And
yep.
when he's not, I'll ask a friend or I'll just do it my own. Mm-hmm. But I have a hard time missing. Like it's just part of me now. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a bigger part.
perfect segue. So you're hammering this thing for a decade and run me through the idea of doing what you did.
So
you can explain what you did first if you want.
Then yeah. So I guess we're going to get into Pod Summit here, which is, it's a new company that my wife and I own.
PS is the one people see me posting about all the time. Yeah. They're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, Jeff's a big part of this.
Here's some context for you.
So it's a, for lack of a better term, it's a podcast conference company. And what we want to do is we want to put on podcast events here in Canada specifically, trying to reframe the Canadian podcast industry and communities, but also giving them a collaborative focal point. So every industry on planet Earth benefits from people coming together to talk about common problems, talk about successes, and celebrate a little bit. And that's what we want to do for Canadian podcasting, because Canadian podcasting is the poor little brother of American podcasting. We got to get lumped into it all. And so one of the things that we wanted to explore is there a voice here in Canada, and how do we amplify that voice? And we think doing it through an event in a space where there is very little of that in Canada. There's been pockets of it. There's a little bit of it in Toronto, but there's no like Canadian scaled event that has the ability to grow and grow and grow that is put on that has the mission of bringing together the communities, the podcasters, the creators, the storytellers, and brings together the industry, the business side of it as well. And so we're trying to explore how to do that effectively. But this company kind of emerged out of, again, this just making whim decisions where one day there's a Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo. So it's like the Comic-Con for Calgary. And they're in Toronto. They're all over the place. And so last year around this time, or kind of in January, I reached out to them because my old co-host wife said to me, it'd be really cool if you guys were like on stage and did a live show at the expo. And I said, you know what? We should have done this years ago. I used to volunteer there and all that. And so I reached out to them. I said, hey, are you in a podcast stage? I'd love to help out. I'll volunteer my time and do whatever. And they said, we're not really doing it. And I said, well, let me send you a proposal. And so I sent them a proposal. They really liked it and said, all right, carte blanche, go ahead. No budget, but go ahead and find people and make the stage. And I said, okay, cool. And so I reached out to a few people that I knew and got some contacts. And I ended up intersecting with this guy, Ernest Barbaric, who used to own Pod Summit. And that was a conference. It was dubbed the first Western Canadian conference, podcast conference in Canada. And that ran in 17, 18, and 19, kind of closed down. I actually went to the 2019 version of it down at Fort Calgary. Really cool experience, got to meet podcasters. And it was a lot of fun to learn about a passion. And it was kind of that first little spark. And so during the pandemic, it didn't run, of course, and he kind of fell out of love with it, moved on from Calgary, and I reached out to him. I'd known him a little bit from that 2019 iteration of it, and I said, this is what I'm doing at the expo. Do you have like any contacts, anyone that I could pull up on stage? Because what I was trying to do, instead of doing just pure live shows, I wanted to introduce a bit more of an educational component to it, which kind of serves as the foundation a bit for what we're doing at Pod Summit. Yep. And this is where Jeff and I intersect. I found the Calgary sessions randomly on YouTube, and I was like, what is this? What is this production value and quality doing in Calgary? Like, I didn't even know this exists. You might've been like, I don't know, I guess you would've been probably episode 60, maybe, somewhere in there, 60, yep. 70. And so I reached out to Jeff and a few others, and I said, I'm putting this thing together. And everyone was like, yup. I was like, wait a minute. Like, I asked four people to be on stage and all four people said yes.
Strangers.
It's just cold call. Like, I'd gotten the contacts from Ernest here. And I was really surprised at that, because I thought it was like, okay, if I can contact 10 people, I might get three people that I can yank up on stage. Again, no budget, don't know anyone, no one knows who I am. I'm asking you to be a, come up on podcasts a bit about random stuff at the Calgary Comic Entertainment Expo. Like, small room. I was like, no one's going to say yes. This is going to be whatever. Everyone says yes. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I start looking, doing a live podcast component, and I start reaching out. Everyone says yes. I'm like, okay. So there's a little bit of energy here, a little bit of momentum. And I started thinking a little bit more. Okay, let's. And then inside of that, Ernest, who used to own Pod Summit, said to me, look, I've moved on from it. If you're at all interested in this, let me know. And I immediately spun my chair around after having that conversation and looked at my wife and I said, we should buy this. Another spontaneous decision. But like, it's when after we had this conversation, I realized a bit more, maybe I am a bit more spontaneous than I realized.
But there's also like, there's also so many experiences that led you to that quick decision, right?
When I think I knew, I had enough knowledge inside of podcasting. And I think I'd planned conferences at work over the pandemic, really enjoyed it, worked with keynote speakers. And then when I did this and I got the energy from people, and then I thought, you know, I did some Googling, oh, something like this doesn't really exist in Canada. I said, this might be an opportunity to start a business. And like, again, never on my radar. And we turned around, we just talked price, and it worked for both of us, what we wanted out of it. And pulled the trigger, like finished the expo at the end of April, and we had bought and incorporated Pod Summit by June 15th. and then launched into trying to find a venue was the first thing we did. And my wife, luckily, she is an event planner by background. So she worked on Oxford Stomp, Stampede Roundup for years. Yep. Those big outdoor concerts here in Calgary. She does planning now. Coming back to work after, not at the same scale, but coming back to work after kids and all that. And so she's wired for this. And it just felt like a really cool intersection where I was like, okay, I'm taking a passion, something that I carry some knowledge in, and she's bringing this execution piece of it all. And it just kind of worked. Mm-hmm. It made sense. Mm-hmm. And the price was right. And we just kind of went for it. Like, not really knowing what was going to shake out of it, but knowing where we kind of wanted to go with it. And it's happened very, very fast. And here we are, we're doing the grand here in September 20th through 21st of this year. And it just, like, we're, like I said, like a year out from when you and I first met, had that, if you remember, let me see if you remember this. Do you remember that conversation?
That Zoom call?
Well, there's a Zoom call, but then we did the interview at the expo.
Oh, I remember that clearly.
So yeah, we did that. And then I remember when I got off the stage, you and I were chatting and I said, I have an idea I want to throw your way. Let's connect in a few weeks. Mm. And it was right then and there. And I was like at that same vibration that I was like, yes. Like after you and I had that conversation, I was like, yes. Because I think the one thing that you did for me amongst all the many things is you're the first person that looked at me and said, you've been podcasting for 10 years. You have an unbelievable amount of knowledge. And I just always looked at it as like, it was just like a hobby
this
knowledge.
Weird
like,
thing, right?
Yeah. Like, does anyone care that I know like this and this about Star Wars? Not really. Can I use that for, you know, maybe in a trivia night, but this knowledge in podcasting that I thought was, I equated it to having knowledge in a Marvel movie or Star Wars. And you kind of said, no, I'm like, this is something that is actually useful and something that is not a lot of people hold this type of knowledge.
Yeah, there's value.
And exactly. And so it has been through the ebbs and flows of it. And so that gave me a lot of encouragement saying like, okay, maybe this is something that I can translate into this like long like desire to do something entrepreneurial that's been buried in me since I was like 5 years old when my parents started doing it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gave me the confidence. I said, okay, well, I have something, I have this job that I love and I can still do, and we can do this on the side.
Yep.
It's time consuming, but I found a way to, again, fit it into the like large profile of the individual that I've become.
Yeah.
And really love doing it. Like it's been such an awakening for me being on the entrepreneurial side of things, but also the networking and the talking and the ability to express myself creatively and test and try new and different things that I just didn't have access to before.
Yep.
Like I had kind of ticked a lot of those boxes in life, and this was one that was not even, it wasn't something I was looking for, but once I found it, I was like, this is providing me an immense amount of personal value.
You and I have talked about this a lot, but like that being reflective and looking back, like this doesn't happen. You know, to go back to the start of this conversation when I was on you to like lay the foundation for this, you know, your passion for like pop culture.
Yeah.
Because explain to me how you think about that now. Because all these random things you've done over all these years have led to this moment in time where now you and your wife own this business that's going to bring a voice to podcasting in Canada.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen just like, you don't roll out of bed one day and be like, I think I'm going to buy this and try it.
Yeah, the spontaneity of like as a theme inside of this conversation is, I think it's very much, I think, rooted and underpinned by a lot of thoughtful planning and a lot of commitment to things. Like 10 years of this, 10 years of landscaping, going to school, all this kind of stuff. And it's one of those things when I look back on all of those decisions that there's a lot more intersection points than I was very much aware of. And, you know, it's come to some of those conversations are coming out of you and I discussing, and some of them, like, if you know who Simon Sinek is, like find your why. I did all of that stuff too and went back, and, you know, there's the one really cool, I think it's in Find Your Why, where you draw a line and you draw through your life, all these, the highs and lows of your life. And you can kind of measure your life through the highs and lows and look back on the things that influenced you in particular ways. And even in through doing all that in the last 2 years, like I've charted my way through all of this. And, you know, going back to that Pleasantville, like that path, like it's all, like everything has, I think, been super methodical.
Yep.
And the bearing of the fruits comes later in life. And I think when I sometimes see those, or at least when I was seeing those fruits come to bear, I chalked it up to luck, or I chalked it up to, you know, being in the right place in the right time. And looking back on it all in the last year and a half, you know, I kind of have this perception now with luck is that you kind of make it. Like you can't win the lottery without buying a lottery ticket. So you have to take some initiative.
Yep.
You have to put some effort into making your own luck, making a career, making a family, making a business and all this stuff. And so when I look back on it, it's hundreds of small decisions, maybe thousands of small decisions that's led me to the one big decision that I look back on and say, oh, that was a spontaneous decision, like to go to university, to come out here, to buy Pod Summit, to do all this stuff. But I think it's in the little decisions and it's in the little tweaks.
Yeah.
It's in the, like, I love like Atomic Habits, that book is awesome too, where it's the little things that kind of make the big difference. But all people see is the big thing at the end.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the highlight.
Yeah.
We always see the highlight.
Yeah.
Which is like this reoccurring theme on this show. It's, I'm always like, I love it because it gives people context for how things are actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are conversations that aren't being had very often.
No.
They always see that Instagram post of like, here's my Lambo or whatever, you know, whatever it is. Like, here's
I hope that happens.
Here's my summit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think it's really important to this story specifically that there's like this, just this, like all these experiences and decades to actually pull this thing off, which I find fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's one of those things that it scares me, if I'm going to be honest with you, doing all this stuff. And like, there's just so many moving pieces, so many moving parts. But I've been kind of taking each day and learning something new from it.
You're clinical with it. I feel I'm afraid for you. but like the way you're approaching is very clinical, which is something that I don't have it in me to, you know, you're very methodical of how you're approaching this, which it's fascinating to watch from the outside.
Yeah. I only hope that it comes off on the, I think like, and I do have a lot of confidence that we'll be able to pull this one off. No problem.
Yep.
In the sense that like, of course we're going to make mistakes. And of course we're going to look back and say, oh, I wish we had done X, Y, and Z. And I wish that we had tweaked this piece of it. But I'd say this one is just about getting the first one under us. And then we want to scale. Like, we have lots of ideas going forward, and some of it is limited by budget, some of it is limited by time, and some of it is limited by the fact that we still don't really know our audience. Like, we have a good idea where people are coming from, But because nothing like this has, we did through a couple of businesses, a competitor analysis, and we did a business plan analysis and all this, and they're saying, who's your competitor?
Yeah.
It doesn't really exist in Canada. There's a couple little smaller things that are bolted onto the side of other larger conferences and that. And then you go down to the States, this podcast move and all that. But like the scale of those are thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And here we are trying to squeak our way into something that I think is going to be much more intimate.
Yep.
And I think there's an importance to that intimacy with what we're doing with Pod Summit and setting a tone and a vibe that's going to make things feel different. Like I was, your episode with Graham Edge, mm-hmm. and the idea of disruption and all that and what he's doing with energy disruptors and everything, mm-hmm. that had a profound effect on me because I love that word disruption. Is we don't want to be satisfied with the status quo. And that was a theme through my whole life. It's just like, nope, I'm not going to be satisfied with the status quo. Let's pull the trigger on this. Let's do something a little bit different and let's make an impact, leave a bit of a legacy on this stuff. And I have this kind of philosophy that I love living with is leave it better than you found it. I approach almost everything with that. When I walk into my kitchen, mm-hmm. You wash one dish, mm-hmm. put it away, do whatever, move one thing over, stack one thing up. You've made that better. Like mm-hmm. it's scalable. Yeah. And we want to put a bit of an imprint on Canadian podcasting in particular, because there's a ton of great creators out there. There's a ton of people that are very passionate that have voices that aren't being heard. We need to find a way to amplify that and also make it, I think, an industry out of all this, a robust industry where people don't have issues with discoverability, don't have issues with if they want to monetize, at least that there's outlets and avenues to doing some of that. And I don't think the typical models work anymore, but I think that there's ways to at least start to explore and discover that. We're not going to get the answers, and Pod Summit isn't about giving the answers. Mm. It's about facilitating the conversations and pulling groups together so that we can have those conversations and set tones, set the future path for podcasting in Canada. And because I've been in it for a while, I have this like deep-rooted passion to see it succeed and put everything I have into making it something special.
Which, when I was laughing when you were talking about the Star Wars piece and being on the red carpet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, well, maybe that'll be my thing, right? And fast forward. This volume of work in your show, a decade and all the episodes, allows you to have this idea and now execute on it. So I find it like it's so fitting.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously closer to it, but from the outside, I hope people aren't confused of why it's such a brilliant idea and how it just like fits with you perfectly. There's not too many people that can pull this off.
It's going to be a lot of fun, man. I'm looking forward to it.
This has been fun, dude.
Oh, so good, man. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Well, it's funny how fast it happens, right? Like you and I meet a year ago and there's, without you making a decision to do what you're doing right now, you and I would have stayed connected, but not do this.
No, absolutely not. And not in kind of like there's like some really cool stuff that we've been able to just vibe over and chat about. And the influence that all of this has had on me is profound. Mm-hmm. And it's been really cool. Like I looked it up purposely yesterday. Like we met or first talked almost a year ago to the day, which is like, wow. It's like crazy. I would have said that was in 22 or 21.
No, it's like quick, man.
Yeah. And how things come together. And I think that's what's really cool about all this is that I think it exemplifies that you don't need, like there's all the work you got to put into it.
Yeah.
But things can change very fast.
For sure.
And I've bolted this onto the side of my life and I kind of love this big, broad foundation that I put together, like the husband-father thing, the career thing, still this piece of it. Yep. It's all kind of makes sense for me and just got to fit it all into my brain.
Totally. Well, and that's the cool thing about podcasting specifically, right? People always ask me, like, why are you doing this? Are you making money? No, this thing cost me thousands of dollars. But it's because of this, right? It creates community and it creates alignment. So, when it feels like it's 2022, it's 12 months because there's like instant alignment and then everything goes a lot quicker.
Yeah. And that's something that you and I are going to explore down the road is like the idea of podcasting and maybe dislocating it from some of the common tropes of what it is, because I think it's very, very much an untapped piece of portfolios, of brands, of all of it that I think we're starting to see a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Where it's translating to something bigger, but like the return isn't financial in podcasting. It's something much more than that.
Yep. I end the show when I say Calgary, where's your head go?
Oh, man. So I'm going to tell one quick story before
You can do whatever you want. You're fine.
That has to do exactly with this question. But so my wife and I, during the pandemic, whenever we all went remote, like I worked remotely for 2.5 years in my basement. Not the healthiest thing in the world. I thought it was awesome for like a year. And then I was like, my goodness, I need to get out of here. But during that time, remote worked, especially 21, it felt like that was just going to be it forever. Mm-hmm. And so we sat down one night and we said, all right, I can work remotely from anywhere. Where would we move? And the only confines we put on had to be inside of Canada. We didn't want to leave Canada.
Yep.
We have family in Ontario. My wife's family is from Vancouver. We have one of my wife's cousins here. So we don't have any family support here, never have with the kids, anything. And so that's always been very hard. So we said, okay, where would we move? We could move anywhere. Go out east, out west. After long discussions, we said, we're staying in Calgary. Like, there's nowhere else we want to be. There's nowhere else where we find that we can be as successful. And even though we don't have the family support, which is probably one of the hardest things in life for us,
yep,
is not having grandparents here, not having my mom and dad, my sister, all that, we still chose to stay in Calgary. And I think the word that really explains that, at least for me, is Calgary provides this really wonderful intersection of balance. Is I can balance my life and my career. I can balance my hobbies. I can balance just about everything and explore what I want to do inside of this city. There's no other city that I think, in Canada at least, that can provide this sort of balance that I've found inside of my life. And so I look back on all the decisions that we've made that have led us to this point. And we're always trying to find that balance. Like, even going back to me wanting to be a geologist, like, this place allowed me to be a geologist, do all those things I wanted to do, make a good living wage, but also go home to my family every single night.
Yep.
It allowed me to find this like really cool podcast community that doesn't exist outside of, you know, in Canada, at least I don't think in the same way, because we have all these pockets, but it's allowed me to develop and kind of balance my life between my hobbies and my passions. And so I look at Calgary as somewhere that just provides that, I think, unequivocal balance in life. It's a city that can facilitate that for you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a small town dude that lives in a relatively big city, but this city in itself feels like that.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a small town city that has all the amenities and all the access of a big city.
Yeah.
But you don't have like that same, you know, growing up north of Toronto, like, mm-hmm, Toronto feels like a big city.
Yeah.
This doesn't. Like, you can drive across Calgary in like 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so it might be an odd one, but like, I think balance, mm-hmm, is something that's really struck me about the city and the ability to kind of live inside of that and really find out who I am inside of it.
That's cool, man. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, unbelievable, man. I'm so happy that I got to be here and just hang out and vibe inside
it. It fits, right?
Like,
it all fits with what your vision is for the industry. And yeah, it was cool to actually sit down. Now I can like, now I know more, which is great. Now I don't have to be, I don't have to hide from you talking in other places. So,
well, I've even held stuff back.
Yeah, just
I knew this was an eventuality.
Yeah,
and you know, I've been excited to do it. And yeah, you know, you guys are doing some awesome stuff. And you know, just you guys out there, just wait to see what Jeff and the crew are gonna do here in the future. Unbelievable.
Yeah, be cool. We appreciate it. Thanks again, dude.